55. Even at his angle, Mike saw Jamie stumble in the sand on the other side of the door and stagger away. He took a swaying step to the right, but she was already gone. He counted 5 minutes, 22 seconds, until the charge went off. He made a mental countdown timer and gave it the ants to hold for him. The patchwork man glared through the rings after Jamie for a moment. Then he reached down and poked at the serif. He shifted his fingers, looking for some sign of life. He sighed, and his crooked shoulders heaved. Mike considered reaching for the pistol on the floor and rejected the idea. Crouching or bending over would not be advisable. He took a few moments to find his balance. The gash on his side was longer than his hand, but he didn't think there was any danger of anything falling out or getting worse. He could still move. The serif, with the chunk of metal in its head, took a few quick steps up the ramp and onto the pathway. It walked through the door without hesitation. Mike saw it march off across the desert, following Jamie's footprints. He heard her yell in the distance. The patchwork man still glared into the rings. On the far side of the ramp, hidden from the creature, Sasha lay in a heap. She'd been thrown down by the explosion. He saw a small cut below her ear, another on the side of her neck, and some seepage on her stitches, but not much blood. He counted to four and watched her chest expand with a slow, steady breath. Mike took a few deep breaths of his own. The air tasted wrong. He pushed himself away from the workstation and fishhooks of pain tore at his side. The temperature in the room had dropped 10 degrees already. The nitrogen was stealing all of the heat, which also meant it was displacing all the oxygen in the room. He forced himself to move. His attempt to run was more of a controlled stagger. Every time he swung his right leg, the fishhooks pulled at his ribs and threw his balance off. He was pretty sure Arthur would have outrun him. He glanced back. Twisting his neck and shoulders didn't make his ribs feel any better. The patchwork man came after him in long strides. It was like watching an old cartoon character move, rolling its legs forward one after the other. It flexed its half-frozen arm. Where was the other serif? Was there one? Was it just the patchwork man? Mike hobbled toward the door, then cut back between the small forest of tool chests. The black one banged again as he moved past it. One of the rivets burst and the side panel pushed out a bit. On the other side of the tool chest was Staff Sergeant Jim Duncan. His body was half covered by the serif he'd killed as he died. The monster's corpse had forced the Marine's rifle away from him as it fell. Mike dropped to his knees and pushed Duncan's cold finger off the trigger. He yanked at the rifle. A strap bound it to his arm in what was probably a very efficient way under other circumstances. He heard sounds behind him, the slap of a bare foot on concrete, the tap of toenails that were too long, the wheels squeaking on a tool chest as it was pushed out of the way. Mike pulled at the rifle again. The strap shifted, twisted, but didn't come loose. The ants diagrammed the strap, studied the body, traced lines of tension. His finger darted out to stab at a clasp, and the rifle was in his hands. He rolled over, making his wounds shriek, and fired a burst of shots into the hand reaching for him. The patchwork man snarled. Two fingers spun away. Another swung on a trio of loose stitches. Mike squeezed the trigger again and again and again. The rifle bucked in his arms as he tried to mimic the Marine's firing stance while laying on the ground. Half his shots went wild. Three more skimmed the creature's flesh. Two of those plucked at the stitches holding the thing together. The rest drove the creature back a few steps. The rifle snapped empty after the sixth burst. Blood leaked from half a dozen wounds across the patchwork man's body. It didn't seem to notice any of them. A single finger came up and bobbed, side to side. The creature made a clucking noise, the sound of a disappointed teacher. A roar of wind came from the rings. Behind the patchwork man, sand blew out of the door. It pattered against the pathway and the floor and the bodies. The patchwork man froze. Its expression softened, and its eyes widened, even the tiny ones. The shredded lips quivered and flexed on either end.
"At last," it whispered, "my lord has arrived."
Under the sound of wind, Mike could hear something else, a thrumming, rippling sound like air pounding against a huge kite or flag. As it increased, the wind picked up. The patchwork man turned to the rings, and Sasha cracked it across the jaw with the rifle stock. The blow wrenched its head around. It straightened back, and she hit it again. This time a few teeth pinged against the toolbox. Mike struggled to his feet. Sasha tried to swing a third time, and the patchwork man grabbed her arm, squeezing the line of stitches and bandages. She screamed. The rifle clattered to the floor. The creature grabbed her by the throat, sinking its jagged fingernails into her flesh. Mike grabbed his empty rifle by the barrel and swung it like a baseball bat. It cracked into the back of the patchwork man's skull. Mike ignored the pain in his side and swept the rifle back to hit it again. The patchwork man staggered. Sasha dropped to the floor and slapped her hands over her throat. Her fingers were wet and red. It turned to look down at Mike. Its human eye was dilated.
"I will beg my lord's forgiveness," it muttered, "for having no worthy food for his arrival. You are not worthy of joining with him."
Miller drove the rifle stock up into its face. The patchwork man stumbled back and crashed against the toolbox. Then it tumbled to the ground and tipped the steel case over on top of itself. A rain of fuses spilled over it. It didn't move. It was still breathing, though. Sasha wheezed. Mike dropped the empty rifle and kneeled by her.
"Did it cut an artery? Your windpipe?"
"Can't breathe,"
she croaked.
"It's the nitrogen in the air. Try to be calm."
He touched her fingers.
"Let me see."
She shook her head and flinched back.
"Can you feel it pulsing against your hand? If it cuts your carotid, it should feel like you're blocking a hose."
She shook her head again, a little slower.
"Trust me," he said. "Let me see."
Sasha closed her eyes. Her fingers pulled away from her throat. They were sticky with blood, and more of it ran down to stain the collar of her shirt. It was a steady stream, though, not a pulse.
"You're going to be okay," he said. "It looks a lot worse than it is. Come on."
He pulled her to her feet. She pressed one hand against her throat and pointed at the patchwork man with the other.
"What about Frankenstein?"
"Why didn't you just shoot it?"
"Because, unlike some supposed fucking geniuses," she said, "I wasn't going to spray gunfire in the direction of one of my friends."
"Sorry."
"Forget it."
"So now we're friends?"
"Fuck off. What are we doing with him?"
"Nothing for now. We've got 4 minutes, 9 seconds until that charge blows."
Mike hobbled toward the door. The new wave of adrenaline and endorphins were helping to hide the pain. She glanced at the patchwork man, scooped up her rifle, and followed Mike.
"It's not enough. It won't destroy the door."
"I know, but we need to get Jamie first."
"How?"
He crouched down and grabbed one of the nitrogen hoses. The blast had flung most of it to the far side of the room, but the heavy flange that had connected it to the rings was still near the ramp. He stood up and dragged more of it over. The far end was ragged from the explosion, but there was still over 40 feet.
"I'm going after her."
Sasha looked at the sand and dust whirling out of the wasteland. The winds on the other side of the door weren't hurricane strength, but they didn't look much lower. She'd read stories about sandstorms cutting people apart and wondered how much truth there was to them. And then the light shifted in the wasteland. She looked up through the shimmering haze around the rings and saw something dark stretch across the sky. It could have been a cloud, but it seemed too solid and too fast. Under the noise of the wind, she thought she heard something, like a rumbling voice. And it was,
"Take this," Mike said.
He shoved the end of the hose closest to the flange into her hands. She blinked and looked at it.
"What? Why?"
"I'm going to run the hose through the door."
He pointed at the whirling sand. It seemed to be dying down, but there was no way to be sure.
"I'm hoping it'll act like a lifeline. Give me something to follow through all of that. Maybe it'll help keep the door open, too. Keep it from switching to another reality."
"And if it does switch?"
"Then I guess we'll end up somewhere else."
There were 5 dead Marines near the ramp. None of them had a sidearm. Mike didn't trust himself with a rifle. The ants had enough reference pictures to switch out the magazine on Black's pistol, but the pistol was 2 yards to the right. Black's body was to the left, and Mike didn't have time to search for the magazines. He took a deep breath. The air by the rings smelled dry and dead, but there was more oxygen in it. He took another breath, and his head cleared. He hadn't realized it had been fuzzy.
3 minutes, 40 seconds, he said. "If I'm not back in 2, you should run for the parking lot. Maybe keep running."
"I'll be here,"
she said with a firm nod. She wrapped one hand around the hose and held her rifle one-handed with the other.
"Go!"
Mike gathered a loose coil of hose under his arm. He took 3 quick steps up the ramp and took one more breath. Sand was pouring out of the rings and sifting down through the expanded steel of the pathway. He tasted dust and concrete on his tongue. He stepped through the door.